Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We might just be in France, but this is global. These players are icons, their stories are noble. In fact, each story into the game is golden. It's way more than just a game. It's a player's story into the pitch and all that she overcame. It's football 2019, and this is its brand new face. Football Inside Out by Copper 90.
What is up? My name is Monkey.
And I'm Heath.
And this is Football Inside Out, a podcast from Copa 90. We're coming to you every day from the Copa 90 clubhouse in Paris, bringing you all the excitement from the 2019 Women's World Cup in France.
And here's what we've got for you today. Ex-USA forward and legend Abby Wambach tells us about her career. And as part of our Unsung Icon series, we're looking at some of the people who are working hard behind the scenes at the tournament. Today, we hear from Football Ferns head coach Tom Sermani. But first of all, we've got a little recap. Last one of the group stages from last night's matches as part of the five things you need to know going into your day.
Football Inside Out by Copper 90.
Okay, number one, who is heading home? First up, Chile. They had a great presence in the clubhouse.
Unfortunately, clubhouse presence doesn't get you to the knockout round.
No, it doesn't get you points.
But they did have a chance to get through, missed a penalty off the crossbar.
Yeah.
It was in their hands.
I know.
No disrespect. There was a lot of open goal against that goalkeeper. Put it on frame.
Yeah.
No excuses.
Yeah. This is them. This is them in the clubhouse. You can hear them. A little snippet. Apart from that, South Africa, South Korea, Jamaica, Scotland, Argentina, and New Zealand all are heading home.
Sad. But the realities.
Yes.
We have to face that. Number two. France, Germany, Norway, Italy, Spain, USA, Sweden, England, Japan, Canada, Netherlands, and Australia all on to the next rounds, finishing first or second in their groups, which is probably who you'd expect.
Yeah, there's no surprises there.
Italy's a surprise.
Italy's a surprise.
For a top two.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it.
But apart from that, that is it. And there's some very good matchups, which we're going to tell you about in a little sec. Apart from that, who went through on third place? China, Brazil, Nigeria, and Cameroon. Some of them went through on 3 points. Is that right?
Yes.
That's crazy.
So Cameroon, I believe.
Yeah, they won their game against New Zealand, knocking New Zealand out and finalizing their place in the knockout stages.
Chile, if they finished their penalty, would have gone through on 3 points and being only having scored in one match.
Yep, but instead Nigeria went through in their place, which I think is deservedly so.
Imagine what Nigeria was going through on that penalty that hit the crossbar.
I know. Yeah, do you think they were watching?
100%. No, they were at Disney Paris.
I don't know. Some people don't like to watch. They're just like,
I'm sure some had
after.
Their eyes closed.
Matchups. We've got Germany versus Nigeria, Norway versus Australia, England versus Cameroon, France versus Brazil, Spain versus USA, Canada versus Sweden, Italy versus China, and Netherlands versus Japan.
Quickly, what's your favorite matchup of those?
Give
me one or two.
I'm going to say the Norway-Australia one is going to be interesting. And the Italy-China one as well.
Yeah, Italy-China. I'm riding for Italy for a while now.
Yeah, me too.
And then Canada-Sweden is going to be good too.
Number five.
Our producer's telling us to speed up, but she can't even
Stop
see the time.
Talking. I know,
she can't even see the time.
On
the time
head.
Is on her forehead.
We actually have 40 more seconds, producer Lucy, so I'm just going to long it out with this speech. Number five.
The Premier League has already made their statement based on all the VAR controversies of the World Cup this year that they will not use video assistant refs in the 2019 2020 seasons to rule on goalkeepers moving off their lines to save a penalty, meaning the ref on the pitch and the sideline refs have to be the ones to do that. They're not going to use VAR to call on those opportunities, which is
good.
Is already improving the situation.
Good, because it's been absolutely shocking,
yeah.
I think, in this tournament. Do you think they use this tournament as a test?
Why now?
Yeah, I don't know why, but it's been crap, basically. Yeah. So I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And that's... Wait.
We're over. Those are the five things you need to know going into your day.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, Heath.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I've got a really itchy leg because I've been attacked by mosquitoes.
They say that's rich blood.
Yeah, they've really got me. Hopefully I don't have Zika.
Do you believe that there's a theory that every 7 years your body resets itself?
What? No, never heard
like
that.
Like every 7 years, your body goes through a certain amount of changes. And I'm convinced that this is real because I used to be brutally attacked by mosquitoes. Me and mosquitoes get along just fine now.
What do you mean it resets itself?
I don't know exactly what it is, but it's something biological that your body goes through a certain amount of change. Basically like food allergies and things like that, your body can like every 7 years can react differently. Again, I don't think it's like an exact science, but over a certain amount of time, your body redevelops or evolves or grows immune to or whatever, that you can have a completely different sort of like, I don't know the right way to explain it, but
strange.
Yeah. I don't get attacked by mosquitoes anymore.
I don't know how people with EpiPens would feel about that theory, but.
Maybe. Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a full reset. Like, I don't think we like get to start over and like.
Oh, just turn yourself on and off again. You'll be fine.
And everything you did wrong, it's gone. You just started from scratch again. I think it's just certain things that I had heard that your body goes through these like 7 year cycles. Mm. And I don't think it's like absolute, but I think, you know, I'm convinced it's real because I don't get attacked by mosquitoes.
That's
and I used to get it really. I mean, I'm sure I'll get one once in a while, but I used to be like, if I was outside and there was. In a, say, a large area, and there was me and one mosquito, that mosquito would find me, like, for sure.
I'm pretty sure it's the same mosquito in my flat as well, and it's been there for, like, 3 weeks.
You should go on a hunt.
I know, I might name it. I feel like we're mates now. It's been there too long.
I wouldn't consider it a mate if mates. It's attacking
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's every, true, yeah. Every Keeping every it alive.
I got a question for you, actually.
Yeah, go on.
I haven't had a chance to ask. Is this your first kind of major tournament? Live?
This is my first major tournament live, being here, yeah.
And did you have any sort of preconceived notions that perhaps this tournament hasn't lived up to? Has it exceeded any expectations? Just sort of, we've gone through the group stages now. You've been to a match.
Yep.
You've been around the city. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you are overly, like, sort of surprised about?
I guess the only thing that I was like slightly disappointed about was the fan zone at the beginning of the tournament. But I think that's because the weather was like really, really, really bad. Now it's a lot more vibey.
Yeah.
And there's loads of people in there just chilling and watching all the different types of games. But at the beginning, that was the only thing I was like, oh, a bit disappointed. Because obviously you'd watch fan zones from last year's World Cup, which obviously there's a lot more people there. And you'd be like, sick. But yeah, when I first experienced it, not so much. But I've gone back there since, and there's a lot of sunbathing going on, watching football, which I can get down with.
That's a pretty good combination.
Yeah. It's 35 degrees here next week. Did you see that?
Yeah. So for people in the US, that's like in the 90s, like mid-90s.
Yeah, which is hot, it's hot for Europe.
It's very hot because it's not like you're escaping to a place with air conditioning. You're just dealing with it, you know? But we all become, I feel like everyone becomes a lot more free when that happens. Because when you're all hot, it's like in New York.
Or naked.
No, that too, but it's more of just like, you know, some people like hate the idea of sweating. But when you get into like humid East Coast, like New York, and you're commuting, and you look to your left and like you're feeling like nasty, and you look to your left and your right, and you realize everybody's in this together, you're just who gives a shit?
But there's aircon on the metro here, which is not a thing in London. We do not have aircon on the tube.
I saw that. They just put the window down and create like the tunnel of like scented humans that shoots through
disgusting.
It.
Disgusting. Yeah.
It's the same in New York in a lot of them. Some of them have aircon now, but a lot of them just lower the window, you know? Yeah, the old like roll down in the old like low rider cars where you had to reach over and like wind the window down.
And there's always like one person with a head like out of the window. Yeah. I'm like at perfect armpit height as well, which is not good. Hey, have you ever played in a match where you remember where it was particularly hot and you wanted to come off?
Yes. So anytime that I've played on in a summer on artificial surfaces,
they are horrible.
Yeah. It's always like 10 to 20 degrees Fahrenheit hotter. Yeah. Like that Gold Cup final that I told you about where we lost to Mexico, the on-pitch temperature that day was over 40 degrees.
That's crazy.
Centigrade?
Yeah.
Do you say Celsius?
We say Celsius.
Okay, yeah, Celsius. But I hear people say centigrade and I'm like, not a thing.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are you, a scientist? Yeah. Let it go. Okay. Get with it now. 2019. The US and England, we pick and choose the things we want to do from the metric system.
We're cultured, so we can use both.
We use miles. We can convert to kilometers. We use centigrade. We
stone.
We decided to use Fahrenheit.
Why do we use stone in the UK?
Do you use yards? Meters?
Meters and centimeters more than yards, yeah. Well, do you use yards sometimes, yeah.
We have absolutely ruined the world, haven't we? Yeah, there was such an easy system called the metric system. Where you're like, nah, we'll take some of it.
Yeah, typical British. We're just going to have all of it. We're going to take all of it. Yeah. It's all ours.
The only consistency, this is really bad to say, but the only consistency that's used like grams in the US is the drug industry.
Very consistent.
They didn't switch to any other sort of like ounces. Yeah. I guess they could use ounces, but like for the most part, it's a universal like measurement system that like people in the that industry have stuck with and not, you know, tried to localize.
They've really got something there, I think.
Yeah.
Metric smart system. People. So playing on artificial, it's like the rubber. It's the rubber that makes it hot, right?
I think it's the rubber because some of them don't have rubber too. Some of them have sand in them, but they're like really, it's just really, really hot to the point where your feet actually burn, like they hurt.
Yeah.
And if you stand still too long, your feet start to like, that you can feel, you feel like you're walking on the sun.
Yeah, I played a final, a cup final a couple of years ago on artificial turf. And we all had that problem. And a lot of people had to like change boots. And I had blisters in the strangest places, like all on the bottom of my feet.
Yeah, like real heat blisters.
Yeah, like heat blisters. Yeah. It was horrible.
When I played in Dallas, it was the first club that I went to after I had my kind of stint in Europe. Mm. And by summertime, we were training on the pitch by 8 a.m. because it was so hot that by 11, it was scorching. Like you're talking about close to 40 degrees, close to like 100 degrees US temperatures, like really, really hot. It sucked because you had to get in the cycle of getting up really, really early, but the upside is like you're home by like 11:30.
Yeah.
And in a swimming pool.
What's the upside of having like an artificial grass pitch if you live in such a hot area? I guess that it's hard to grow grass.
No, I mean, down there we were on grass, but you do have them in a lot of like the one next to us that a lot of the academy kids train on and stuff was turf. And it's more of just a cost thing. It's more of just like the longevity of a pitch. If you have team after like regular usage, you can get a lot more out of a multi-sport artificial turf pitch.
That's true. Imagine it's a little bit like playing on hot coal.
Yeah.
If you can play football on hot coal, you can play football anywhere.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the theory.
We should put that on a t-shirt
and sell it.
Yeah.
Well,
we got two sales so far.
Has a new e-com store. Yeah, that was a nice segment. True. Good plug.
Yeah. We do. Actually, they do. We haven't mentioned that in a while. E-com store.
Yeah, we do have a new e-com store. And if you'd like to see me and Heath modeling t-shirts, then head over to the Copa 90 website.
But yeah, so just the only thing was the fan zone for you then?
Just the fan zone, yeah. Everything else is like really not outdone my expectations. I guess my expectations were quite high, but yeah. Especially the opening game, that actually did outdo my expectations. It felt more emotional than I thought it would. Especially like young girls, I thought this is so cool because this is something that I never saw growing up, and all these young girls get to see it and get to see someone like them play on a big stage, and that was really exciting for me, for them.
The only thing I noticed the difference is, Chile aside, who are all wearing Chilean colors, flags, everything, was just on non-match days of certain teams, people were dressed normal.
Mm.
And that was the biggest difference. The only difference was that from Russia that I noticed was there, it was like people packed their bags with only colors of their country.
Right,
and every single day it was like, you were in a bright yellow if your country flag or national team wore yellow. You just only packed yellow stuff. Whereas here you see people in a lot more street clothes, a little bit younger crowds too. So like parents and kids is a little bit different, a dynamic, but like less dressed every single day in like
colors.
Face paint and colors and like sort of the celebration of.
I saw a lot of Scots on the metro the other day. After that game, lots of blue and white flags, which I thought was quite cool.
Imagine being like a diaspora and not having, like, your rare chance is tournaments being hosted in your country and your nation has come here.
Where's like the strangest place you've played a game of football?
The strangest?
Yeah, the most sort of like bizarre.
I don't know. What about you? I'm trying to think of how I would. Sort of.
I always try and play pickup when I'm traveling, like when I'm DJing. Sometimes I pack my boots, but like my Astros or whatever. Just if I see a game, I'll go join in. Like I've played in Ibiza with a bunch of people I don't know. I played in Thailand on the beach.
Yeah, I would say that the most, it's not the most bizarre, but the most fun that I had, which was a real eye-opener for me, is the U.S. was playing in a qualifier down at Aztec. It was always my dream to play in Aztec. I never got the chance to do it as a player. So I went down there for the U.S.'s last qualifying cycle. We were shooting a film just about the experience of me getting the chance now to go and experience Aztec, but this time as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into sort of like some of the like neighborhoods, and there was just like a cage football pitch like you see in most countries around the world. The dynamic that it made up of people on that court that were all playing and having fun together was the most inclusive I've ever seen football in general, where they had sort of the unathletic chubby kid.
Mm-hmm.
They had a couple of really good players. They had older people that were working and taking a lunch break, and they were all just playing. And they all had this sort of acceptance and dynamic that they could find a way to compete and have fun with a big group, whereas I'd never seen that. Usually it's like either it's for fun or it's competitive, but it was like a competitive match and everybody, it was just a super huge wide range of people that I'd never seen play football together. Cause in the US you just don't like in like Chinatown and in New York, you'll see a lot of the different people from the sort of working industries will pop out. A lot of Hispanics will pop out onto the fields at lunchtime and play a game. But this was like, they all knew how to play. Whereas this one had kids who didn't know how to play, but were welcome to play on this pitch and have a good time. And it was really, really eye-opening to me that people could sort of interact like that on a football pitch.
Did you join in? Or you just...
Yeah, I played.
You did?
I played, okay, cool. Yeah. I went for Megs every time I got the ball. But there was some... You're shocked at like it's a regular cage pitch in the middle of a city with random people that there's some quality talent of people playing. There's also some guys that had never played before. There was men, women, kids, grown-ups, adults. It was just a wide range of things. But yeah, I jumped in and played with them for a little bit and we recorded. It was just a lot of fun, you know. You just started to, it's so cliche, but like you started to have, everybody could speak the same language at a certain point because it was just what we all knew what we were doing, playing football. And you score a goal and everybody's high-fiving. You don't have to have a certain communication.
Yeah,
you could smile and high-five and you can learn simple, like good game, well done. And like you create your own quick dynamic with all these people just on a pitch. I mean, I speak Spanish, but like it wasn't about that. It was just like a really unique thing for me to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's almost like an easy way for you to connect culturally with people without even saying a single word in the same language. You can literally just walk onto a field and have that connection straight away, which I think is really cool. And obviously is the cliche of this, of it's a language, but it kind of is, to be not cheesy.
You can see people all over Paris. Mm. You'll see a ball pop up and then people will just start to join in for like a little keepy uppies to pass the time.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily all know each other. Somebody can jump in and you're welcome to be part of it. You'll see like that circle get bigger and bigger and people just sort of hanging out. And it's just, it's pretty cool, even if you don't know how to play.
I did it at the American Outlaws. What do you think? What do you call those things?
Tailgate. Tailgate, yeah.
I played football with a couple of people there. Just keep you up. It's not a game.
Yeah.
It was hot that day and I had to go to the airport.
It did look hot. I was like, the place looked like a kind of place that would have a pool, but I didn't see a pool. I saw a deck. I saw like a deck area and I was like, you were panning the camera and I was like, pan to the pool where everybody gets to like cool off.
Yeah, no, unfortunately no pool. Yeah. But talking of American Outlaws, she would get absolutely swamped if she ever went to one of their tailgates. Abby Wambach. We have a Detours, Dead Ends and Destinations from her. And here it is.
Detours, Dead Ends and Destinations.
I didn't really fall in love with playing the game until maybe towards the end of my collegiate career. Now, that might seem insane to a lot of folks, but it's true for me. I was justifying this game as a way for me to get into college, for me to have some cool experiences. But never did I actually think that I would be able to actually turn it into something of use. I never thought that I could turn this into a professional career, let alone the career I ended up having. And until, like, literally until like the 1999 World Cup, it wouldn't have even been that big of a deal to become a professional soccer player. I wouldn't have been able to support myself financially speaking. But then the 1999 World Cup happened. So for me, if I were to go back and tell my younger self one thing, it for sure would be, you're going to actually do this as a profession and you're actually going to be pretty damn good at it. So might as well like start focusing serious attention on your fitness, focus some serious attention on your foot skills. Those are definitely two areas in which I struggled with my entire career. It's so cool to see the evolution of the women's game and to see people's impact and individual players' impact and teams' impact and the federations themselves. They're starting to really invest real money into their programs, not just in the international game, but you're seeing the club soccer systems really starting to put and pump money into their women's programs. And what ends up happening is, they start getting people to watch and fans and sponsorships and this dream that we all kind of have had of the women's game. I had no concept of what professional women's soccer was at 5 years old. And I think the women's national team, now that I've learned, was just forming when I was like about 5 or 6. But remember, this is like in 1985, 1986. And back then, there was no social media. In fact, there was no internet, right? So access to information was very hard to come by. You know, my idols growing up was, you know, the number 23 from the Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan. And then as I got older, understanding of youth national team programs, because the ODP development system, the Olympic development program that I played in, that was like the feeder system into the youth national teams. So my awareness of professional sports, like dreaming of becoming a women's professional athlete, never even entered my mind as a possibility, because it wasn't, it literally wasn't. The women's national team didn't start to get paid until I think like the 96 or 99, the Olympics or the 99 World Cup. So my kids, though their experience is very different than probably many other kids in the world, it's so beautiful and inspiring to me to kind of experience this through their eyes, experience something that I helped build and experience something that is really important to shaping these kids' dreams, you know, because I think what's so special about our women's national team, and people don't really understand this, they think it's about them being winners. And the truth is everybody out there has to ask themselves, why is the women's U.S. national team so inspiring? Why do people love watching them play? Why are they so magnetic? And the truth is you are looking and watching a group of women who generation after generation have been building upon the culture of this relentless pursuit of excellence. And they've been railing, it's a bunch of women from the beginning of the women's national team. They've been railing against social norms or socially constructed norms that the rest of the world just kind of follows in line. So when people watch a women's national team, they're watching and they're seeing a bunch of women who have been fighting for equal pay, who have been fighting for equal respect and equal rights. So when you watch them and ask yourself, why do I love watching them? And it's because they represent freedom, and they represent not just accepting the status quo and fighting for what's right and fighting for what they deserve. We have had an amazing amount of progress over the last 25, 30 years of women's professional, women's international soccer. I know that women's soccer, people have been playing it, but in terms of a professional league or international soccer, we're still in its infancy, right? And I think that something that's super important to me and maybe to your listeners, you know, I found myself in 2016 on stage standing next to Kobe Bryant and Peyton Manning. And here we are, all three of us who have sacrificed the same amount, had historied careers. We all had wonderful careers and we were getting the same Icon ESPY award. Now, I'm friends with Kobe and Peyton, and they earned every single one of their dollars. However, as soon as we turned our walk off stage and the lights turned off, I just had this really keen awareness, a different emotion. You know, I was on stage with these guys feeling super grateful, like, oh wow, we women, we finally made it. But then as soon as those lights turned off and we walked off stage, I had this realization that, wow, all three of us are walking into very different retirements. And I think that has been the moment in my life that has set me off into this different direction. Because, you know, as a women's national team player, there was a real sense in me that I was doing something important, that I was representing a nation. I was representing a nation at Olympics and World Cups. And not only that, I was winning them. And I was doing good. And I was like, I know that the legacy that I left as a soccer player was strong and important. And yet here I am. You know, I thought that maybe I skirted a little bit of this oppression or prejudice that women feel worldwide. And yet here I am with this reality hitting me, slapping me in the face. You know, Kobe and Peyton are walking into a retirement where they're having to worry about how to invest their hundreds of millions of dollars that they've collectively earned. And I'm trying to figure out how the hell I'm going to pay my mortgage. So in that moment, I realized, oh my gosh, I'm not immune to this. This is every woman's story. Every single woman can point to her right and left, to her counterpart, and that man has made more money than she has, period. And I think that is a story that needs to be told. I'm proud of the career that I've had. And I also think that generationally, we have to be mindful that we've come a very far way. But I stand on the shoulders of many giants, and so does Alex Morgan, and so will the next generation. This progress is called progress because it's a moving needle, and we want to make sure that we get to a place where people are respected, their humanity is not underserved or neglected.
Football Inside Out by Copper 90.
That was really interesting what she was saying when she was stood on stage with Kobe and what was the other athlete's name, sorry?
Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning. What? Sorry, I have absolutely no idea who that guy is, being from the UK.
I thought you travel.
Yeah. Explain to me.
So,
and the UK audience.
Peyton Manning is a first ballot future Hall of Famer, NFL quarterback.
Okay.
One of the best to play the game. He has a brother, Eli Manning. But just like generational leaders, one of the most, like two of the most endorsed between Kobe and Peyton, like mm-hmm. endorsed athletes, like just like sort of like the prototype of professionalism for a quarterback in the NFL.
When she was stood up on stage with them, and then after realizing that she said, obviously her retirement was going to be a lot different to theirs, personally, I would be thinking, especially after winning World Cups and winning Olympics and medals and et cetera, I'd be like, what else am I supposed to do, you fucks?
Yeah.
quite frankly.
Yeah. I can only imagine what you're going through at that point when you've carried sort of on your back so much progress, right? Those other athletes are hugely talented. And like she said, they've earned every dollar that they've made in a very established industry, but she's pioneered and achieved the same, you know, as them, but actually sort of built the plane as she flew it.
And
there's something to that. It's an incredible thing. You know, the other thing that I found with her, which was really interesting, obviously I had a long conversation with her in that interview that we just heard, was sort of everything being lost in the shuffle now of making a difference, like inspiring the next generation of women isn't just about, and men, quite frankly, isn't just about talking to the progressive people in the big cities. She was basically saying, like, challenge me, challenge everyone to find out like who you are so you can find a way to make a difference. Instead of just like, because everybody's running down the street, you just don't go in the street and start running with everybody, you know, that you should look and find out what it is that you want to do and how you want to make a difference and challenge everything and really find out who you are, which is a really interesting perspective, because Abby's a pretty polarizing figure in the sport, and in the sense that like she's very blunt, she's very honest, she's done a ton for the sport, and she is quite frank in what it is she's trying to do, and that can be really intimidating for some people. And that was sort of like the question that I was asking her. I was like, yeah, but you are a superhero. So for somebody who doesn't feel that, and you're from a small town in the middle of nowhere, and you want to get involved, but you don't have control. And she followed up with saying, like, you can't control how you were born, the home you were born into, the way that you were raised. All of these things have been sort of like burned into you without your choice. But question that as you get older. Question those things that you've been taught. Go out and find out who you really are. Don't believe me. Don't believe your parents, the way you've been raised. And really challenge this idea of just how intimidating it can be, and just said, like, you can't control certain things, but at a certain point you can control sort of information and what you want to learn and what you want to know more about yourself.
Yeah, I think it's important to come from people like her, because she comes from that scenario, I guess. She challenged everything around her and found her own path, and without doing that, she wouldn't have got to where she was at the moment. And we've got a surprise for all the listeners. She's going to be co-hosting a show with us in the next sort of coming week or so.
Yeah, and she's in today.
And
she's coming in today.
And she's coming in today to do that. Yeah. So that'll be fun. I've never met her before, so I'm buzzing, really. 101 questions.
She's really cool.
Is she cool?
Yeah,
yeah,
she's cool.
I mean, worried about
she
that.
She is a imposing figure, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can feel the kind of
presence
yeah. of her. I mean, she's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, goal scorer ever in the sport. So.
When she walks into a room, it's Abby Wambach. Abby Wambach's here.
Yeah.
It's Abby Wambach Day today.
Exactly. Yeah, but another person that's actually been doing some really great things for the sport, both on the club and international level, is New Zealand coach Tom Sirmani, and we have a Unsung Icons package where Monkey got to chat with him, and here's some really cool stuff. So here it is.
The Unsung Icons.
My name's Tom Sirmani. I'm the head coach of the New Zealand women's football team. Initially, what drew me to coaching in women's football was the opportunity in the mid-90s when the Australian women's football program really started. That was kind of the birth of the present-day Matildas. And it came about with when football became an Olympic sport, the sport became eligible for government funding. So overnight, there was a significant amount of funding went into the sport. And I was coaching in the men's youth program at the Institute of Sport at that time, and was approached about taking on and starting a women's program. So it wasn't about women's football, it was about the actual scope of the job that appealed to me. And that firstly brought me into women's football. After a few years, went back into men's football, and then had another opportunity in the early 2000s to go back to women's football, which kind of appealed to me again, and I've virtually been in women's football since then. About 23, 24 years ago, that was the first time in Australia that players didn't actually have to pay to play for the national team. So that was the first step forward, that things got paid for. And now you look at the game where you've got professional leagues throughout the world, where you get players now who can actually earn a living playing football. The profile of the top level players is very high. The knowledge of the game has increased significantly. And, you know, I think even it's taken an inordinate jump probably in the last 4 or 5 years with the level of acceptance, the level of professionalism. And now what you're seeing is that it making real inroads into countries that really, you know, had no time for it a short period ago. I think with regards to female coaches, that I think it's important that females stay involved in the game. If I look at it from a player's perspective and feedback from players, ultimately they just want the best coach they can. They don't really care about, in general, about gender. I think what you need to take into consideration is that the women's game has really only been professional for a very short period of time. So in essence, what females would do is that they would be playing football and then they would have this other life, so that when they finished football, they would go into that other life. Whereas men, for a long period of time, have been professional footballers and then immediately go straight into coaching and stay in the professional game. So you're beginning now to see a rise of female coaches, and they're beginning to come into the game in more and more numbers. So I think now, as players start out and become professionals, become career professionals, then you'll start to see an increase in the number of females coming into the game. So I think it's a time thing. And I think the other thing is that females are smarter than males, so they stay out of coaching a little bit as well and get a proper job. The big picture on a global level is I would like to see the continued sustainability of professional leagues, the continued opportunities for females to be able to play at a professional level, and the continued growth at the younger levels, so that you have got girls playing football in every country from an early age, and that it becomes an accepted part of the culture in every country. And I'd also like to see federations continue to take the women's game and treat it seriously and treat it on the same level. I don't like to use the word equality, because I don't think that's quite the right word, but treat it on the same level. And I think that's beginning to happen. And I think, you know, when you look at the build-up for this World Cup worldwide and in many countries, you're sort of seeing that. But it's important that gets sustained going forward. What I'd like to be remembered for is hopefully developing players, helping players, and contributing to whatever team or country that I've coached. And hopefully whenever I've left the job, that I've left it in a better situation than I went in there.
Football Inside Out by Copper 90.
He was a really cool dude when I met him. Yeah, real honest answers.
I've actually heard that from... Somebody else recently said that too, that he was just a really...
Yeah, really, really cool dude. And really relaxed. He just seemed really chilled. He was one of those coaches that would like walk around the training session, not really saying much, just with like arms behind the back, just, you know, assessing everything that was going on. And other coaches were like taking the rein. Is that the sort of coach that you would be? I don't think you would.
I feel like that's the first sign of...
you're comfortable.
Somebody's coaching. Like, if you go to the coaching conventions that they have in the U.S., there's like thousands of coaches every year go to this coaching convention. And the most common thing you'll see is people in tracksuits walking with their hands behind their back, which is like the sign of a coach, you know, when they walk around like just strolling with a tracksuit on, like it's official. Like, it's like a thing.
They're a real coach.
Yeah. He coached at Orlando Pride.
Yep.
Did he also coach the US as an assistant at one point?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I don't think he mentioned it in that podcast, but I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah, and he also coached men's football and then went back into women's football, which you just heard.
If you could have one accent from around the world, what would it be?
I don't know. I kind of like my accent. British accent's all right.
Yeah. Like, it could be an English accent. Like, it could be like a French accent when you speak English, you know,
Italian. Nah, I think I like an Irish accent, but I don't think. Yeah. You know what?
Go.
Yeah.
We got one of our
Irish accent school
Irish producers nodding his head in approval.
I've got an uncle who is in Ireland, but he is Filipino like I am, and it's still so strange to me seeing a Filipino guy with the thickest Irish accent you've ever heard, and his name's Guan. Guan. So everyone goes Guan, but his name's Guan.
Yeah. When he's on a breakaway, they say Guan.
What about you?
I honestly, Irish is great. Scottish is great. I really, because like I'm guessing like most Americans would be like, are you from England? You could be like, no, it's Irish actually. You should travel. But I really like Irish. I don't want.
what don't you want?
a lot of accents. No, I mean I think Irish is pretty good. It's a pretty good shout.
About like Boston Irish.
No.
No.
We watched that video of the guy getting the tickets from his daughter to like the game 7 of NHL. Like yeah. That's really intense. If I did have a Boston accent, I would want to talk so vulgarly in like terms of like how rough I would use, like I would use all curse words in a casual manner like he did.
Yeah.
Talk like they were both cursing at each other in excitement, and I was like, that's the way I would want to use the
it's
Boston
intense
accent.
I kind of like it. Maybe I'd have a Boston accent. That'd be weird, wouldn't it? I was going to mention something before the podcast ended. In Lyon, there's this attempt to break a world record of the longest football match spread over 4 days. So it's the same people that did the Mount Kilimanjaro match.
Equal and
the
playing field?
Yeah, and the Dead Sea match. So the highest and the lowest, below and above sea level match. But yeah, they reached out and they're going to be doing it from the 27th of June to the 1st of July. And it's going to be rolling subs, 30 minutes. So if you're in Lyon and you want to take part, feel free. It's day and night. I think I might go down and do it.
I felt hugely deprived of
football.
Of football.
Me too. Let's go.
And I would love to do that.
Okay,
we'll get everybody out here. Mandatory participation from the podcast team. All of you. Each and every one of you.
Every single one of you.
And if you don't go, we'll find you. No, that sounds unbelievable. And, you know, being part of breaking a record would be pretty fun.
Yeah, I think so too. That'd be fun. Oh, do we have any day numbers?
No, but we do have fan mail.
Oh, yeah, we do have fan mail.
So Niranjan from Portland sent us a message saying, first off, you guys have been doing a swell job. Very classic 70s email, you know, swell.
Surprised it wasn't faxed to us.
Yeah, and somebody sent it via like the post on a postcard. But my question, as much as I enjoy the U.S. women's national team dominating, I always picture that other countries like Italy or Spain will overtake us like in men's football in maybe 10 to 15 years time. Do you think that this thought is far-fetched or spot on?
I don't see why that is not a possibility. And as far as the game still grows internationally, then we're going to find you and we're going to beat you.
I would agree with this in a lot of cases. So what we've seen on the men's side in the US is that the stability of Major League Soccer has actually done as much or more for developing Central American countries' players, because now most of them are coming into MLS, far more professional environments at younger ages, developing better, and that's increasing the quality of all of those countries, which is now allowing a lot of them to go to MLS and then go abroad or wherever. But you're producing better players and more professional setups for longer periods of time. And so we've seen the margins between a lot of these Central American countries get smaller and smaller and smaller. On the women's side, right, you had Canada and the US for a long time as better than others, along with, I guess, Germany, Sweden, and Japan, and Norway, I guess. But now you're starting to see the stability of all these other leagues coming up and the emphasis on player development, the participation. Like, it is a real wake-up call. Like, the men's side has enough of its own problems, but it's a major wake-up call for the women's national team setup and women's football development in the country, because yes, participation is at an all-time high right now, but now it means we need to continue to increase the quality of coaching at the youth level and really create an ecosystem that's built around having fun, but also developing players, right? We can't just, at a certain point, we won't get away with having the best athletes on the national team because we funnel in some of our best athletes into playing football. Like at a certain point, there's going to have to be a structure in place to player development, or some of these countries that have 100 years of football development and are implementing that into the women's game are going to catch up and pass the US quickly.
Yeah, and I think this tournament is evidence in itself, to be honest. If you look at the England team not so long ago, we weren't really competing at all, and it's just taken a few years of a financial structure and making athletes professional for us to catch up in a very, very short amount of time. And now we're one of the favourites in the tournament. And if that's anything to go by, then I don't see why Italy can't do the same, the African countries can't do the same, et cetera, et cetera. So in answer to your question, yes, in 10 or less than 10 years, I think.
It took England a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally a couple of years of professionalization years. Yeah. To go out and say there's actually a hugely talented pool of women here that just need the structure, and now look where they are.
Yeah, exactly. So I reckon, fingers crossed, less than 10 years, a lot more teams competing in the World Cup for top spot.
Wow.
But that is all we have for today. Thank you for your email, by the way. We're back tomorrow. Make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen to your podcast, so you can never miss an episode. And if you do, then you can go back and listen to them all at once. And please leave us a review as well.
Yeah, and subscribe to the newsletter. Head to copa90.com/WC19 and click or tap on Copa 90 France Daily to sign up and get in touch with us. Get in touch with us because we'd love to hear from you. Send us emails and voice notes to footballinsideout@copa90.com and tweet us using the hashtag, man, my words are messed up. Copa 90 Inside Out. That is it from us today. We will see you tomorrow.
Bye.
Football Inside Out by Copa 90.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.